We're sorry. The number you have dialed, 363-8123, is not in service at this time. Please consult your directory or call your operator for assistance. Thank you. 540-363.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening. Gila is on her way. She has been mildly delayed by transit, but she'll be here in a minute.
There's no such thing as mildly delayed by our transit. It's either major or it's nothing. Okay, well, I look forward to that. And, of course, we have Alex.
You do, and hello, and good evening from Dublin tonight.
Okay, and what is making that? Is that you making that noise, or what?
No,
what?
That noise was Gila coming through our door.
Oh, is she okay? Okay. Wow. All right.
We need to oil them hinges. Is what's going on.
So, Alex, tell us where you are.
I'm in Dublin tonight, everybody. So, hello from Ireland, where it's not tomorrow yet, because ordinarily they're 5 hours ahead, which would put them at around midnight, but it's only 11:04 p.m. here because they set the clocks back this past Sunday when we haven't yet set them back. So it's sort of that weird time where the UK and Ireland is only 4 hours ahead for a few weeks before we go into daylight savings time.
So you're over there in that 1 week of the year where they're only 4 hours away from us.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, so it's still Wednesday here.
You pick the weirdest reasons to go places, but you know, I respect that. I really do.
I wish that was the reason.
It's only 11 o'clock, so you shouldn't be looking so tired.
I am tired. It's been a long week. I've been here since. Well, I flew out Friday night from New York. I got into Dublin on Saturday morning, through London. And I'm here for the ICANN meeting, which is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, which deals with the security and stability of the Internet.
Why do those meetings keep hopping around the globe? Every time you're going to an ICANN meeting, it's somewhere else.
It is, yeah. The last one was in Prague. The one before that was in Seattle. The next one is in Mumbai, actually.
Are they not paying their bills or something? Why can't they ever go back to the place they were?
Well, I guess they're just never welcome again, wherever they are. You know, the ICANN crowd is very, very rowdy, as we all know. But they like to have meetings in interesting places. You know, that's what keeps it interesting, because the meetings themselves aren't really all that thrilling. But it is a place where a lot of the people that are responsible for regulating the security and the stability of the Internet all congregate. all at once. And so it's a great opportunity to talk with others. And I'm here representing, obviously, the Ethereum name service for the world of Web3. And you know, for the world of Web3, ENS, or the Ethereum name service, we're really kind of the Axis Mundi of that world. And so we're integrating with the DNS and the domain name system. And so that hopefully within, I would say, I don't know, the next year or so, our protocol will be the one that fuses the worlds of Web 2 and Web 3 so that we just have one world and one internet the way it's supposed to be.
I know that's something kind of chilling the way you said that, but yeah, you know, hopefully, hopefully all works out and we're on the right side and, you know, the, whatever overlords we have to pray to will treat us kindly. Gila, welcome.
Thank you. I apologize for my tardiness. We can hang that on the MTA.
Any particular train you'd like to blame?
No, I think just the MTA in general.
You can blame the G train if you want. I mean, a lot of people have been doing that lately.
Unfortunately, the G train has very little bearing on my commute. Also,
it's probably the G's fault anyway, though.
Here's the thing. I feel good about the G train because the dot for it is green.
It's the only green train. That's true.
Green is my favorite. Well, 4, 5, and 6 are also green.
Except for those. Yes, you're right.
But, you know, the G is kind of a nice lime green. I do vibe with a lime green, and G is my initial. And, you know, I think I have like a G train keychain or hat or something. So I can never really blame the G train. I feel like we're
all right.
It's cosmically linked.
G train is off the hook. We have some mail. Thank you, everybody, who wrote in last week with kind thoughts on our show. Basically paying tribute to our dear friend, Greg Newby, who lost his battle with cancer last week. A couple of letters. Let's go through these. We can't read them all, but, I want to thank everybody who did send a letter or acknowledged us in some way on one of the social media outlets. This is from Lob. I admit I barely knew about Greg Newby. I remember seeing his name mentioned a few times before the recent events, but not much more. Your tribute of the messages from his friends was the best tribute a person could hope for. I'm glad it was raining because I cried my eyes out walking in the city, listening to the loving messages. He was clearly loved. And thank you, Lob, for that that beautiful letter. This from John. I just wanted to thank you for your beautiful tribute to Greg. What an amazing human being. And thanks for keeping us posted. After I saw the Hope closing ceremonies, I was able to reach out and tell him what an inspiration he was to me. And that was a gift many of us were able to take advantage of, just being able to tell somebody you matter. You've been a lot to me. And while, you know, you're in a bad place and getting somewhere sooner than the rest of us, we're still, you know, going to think about you and talk to you as much as we can and tell you how much you mean to us. So, you know, I'm grateful I was able to do that. Kyle and I went up to Whitehorse not too long ago, within the last month. And it was life-changing. It really was to see a friend of yours in that state and to be able to talk to them one last time. If you have that opportunity, take it. You know, it's not something to be afraid of. It's something we all must face at one time or another in our lives, probably many times. Okay, all that aside, what is going on in the world of technology, hacking? We haven't really done a normal show in quite a while, so we're going to try to do that tonight, and we are also doing overtime tonight. Now, I know last week we didn't get any phone calls, except I think Rebel called at the end after we signed off. I think his alarm might have been late or something. but other than that, we haven't been on overtime for quite some time, so people sometimes forget. So if you want to call in, you can do so after the show on YouTube, channel 2600, and we'll give out the phone number there. All right. We have another letter actually from Frank. Writes in and says, based on your coverage of the IceBlock app, I thought you all might be interested in this. If you haven't heard of it already, it's called resistmap.com. Spread the word. And that is exactly what we are doing. Resistmap.com. I went to the site. It looks pretty interesting. It doesn't look like it's being updated a whole lot, but it looks like it's got some you know, a good backbone there to handle a whole lot of things that are happening, resistance of various sorts, ICE raids, abuses, things like that. Just basically another way of reporting things. We could use as many of those as possible. So check it out. Let us know what you think of it. Make it better. ResistMap.com.
Yeah, a really wide range of them, from ones that are hyper-local to national or everywhere in between. That's fine. Like, we should embrace whatever kind of tools people want to build to help talk about their community, keep people safe, and spread information.
Absolutely, yes. Personally, my Nest thermometer has stopped working as a smart thermometer. To update people on this, yeah, you're smirking, Rob. Okay, fine. It's funny to a lot of people to be inconvenienced, but it paints a picture of something much bigger that's facing us, where basically these tech companies come in, they buy something that you have already bought. You know, they buy the company, and then they discontinue the company, and you're left holding the bag. You know, you've bought something that you expect to work, and they say, no, we don't want to support this anymore, and now we own it so we can do that. That's what Google did to Nest, at least the early version of Nest. And it's really unbelievable. If you look around, the people who are defending Google for this, it's just unbelievable that this is considered normal now. Well, you have to upgrade. When's the last time you upgraded your PC? Basically, you don't have to upgrade every little bit of anything that you own. If something is working, there's no reason for it to not to continue working, unless it's artificially broken, which is the case here. Now, if a company decides that they have lost interest in the product, or they don't have the technical knowledge, I don't know what the problem is, or the technology just is outpacing whatever the device is, it's incumbent upon you to replace these devices for the customers that purchase them. You know, if the device breaks, yeah, okay, it's broken. Not your fault. You know, and then the consumer has to either buy a new one or figure out how to get it fixed. But as long as something is working, I don't think companies should have the right to just go and break them and say, go buy another one. That's how you fix it. That's just wrong. That's just completely wrong. So basically, I have a regular thermostat now that I can walk up to and change, but I don't have the thermostat that I paid for, which is the one that I can access on my phone. It's the one where I can set a schedule on the web. It's one where I can realize, hey, I'm coming back from, 6 months on the road, and the house is freezing. Would be nice if I turned the heat on before I got home. And I can do that on a train. I could do that anywhere. Not anymore, unless I buy another one. It's just phenomenal to me that we basically are in this mindset now where everything you buy, you don't really own. You know, you have to constantly be updating and upgrading. And there comes a point where you have this this device, this toy, this bit of technology, whatever it is, it will just stop working. Why? Not because there's anything wrong with it, because it's no longer supported. Yeah. And we're seeing this in every facet of life. We're seeing it in automobiles, where if you want an extra kick in the gas, you have to pay for it. If you want electric windows to go down, you got to pay for that. Monthly fees. It's insane. If somebody from, say, the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s just suddenly teleported to here, they would think we're all out of our minds, that we're allowing this to happen. When you buy something, you own it, and you keep it, and you keep it working. If you break it, then you've broken it. But if you're able to maintain it and keep it running, well, then you are entitled to hold on to it for as long as you possibly can. Look at rotary telephones, perfect example. They will work forever. And the phone companies, they have to support rotary dial. Yeah, if you have a rotary dial phone, it still works. Those pulses still work on landlines. If people don't know what landlines are, I'm sorry. I can only say so much. But imagine if all of a sudden all the rotary phones just somehow stopped working and you just had to buy another phone. There's nothing wrong with the phone. They just turned it off. Well, they couldn't do that because it's not technically possible. But now that it is technically possible, it's just like when we were complaining about the touch-tone fee back in the 80s and 90s. That was a fee that the phone companies would charge you if you wanted touch-tones on your phone. Now, you know, people in the hacker community quickly realized that they're not giving you touch-tones. The touch-tones are in your phone. You know, the phone generates the tones. All they're doing is telling their computer, don't ignore touch-tones from this phone line. That's all you're paying for. Is for basically a yes or a no on a selection. They're not doing a damn bit of work. And when you explain that to average people with no technical knowledge, they got it very quickly. And that's why I think, you know, with all the right to repair legislation being passed around throughout the country, that's why people get that as well, whether they're driving tractors or cars or, you know, basically have some bit of technology that they want to be able to fix themselves and not rely on a particular manufacturer that has to get a computer code and nobody else can touch it except them. That's not ownership. That's basically just leasing away your life and paying somebody a monthly fee just to collect the monthly fee. So anyway, Google, you owe me a thermostat, or you owe me something, but this is not right. I will never buy a closed source thermostat again. That was a big mistake, I know, but there weren't any other options at the time. If anyone out there has a workaround, I'm sure, you know, somebody might come up with something, although I believe it's a black box as far as what goes on inside a Nest thermostat. If somebody has cracked through that, I'd love to hear about it, and I would like to defeat the system that is restricting it from being used at all. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, Emmanuel. When did you buy the Nest thermostat?
Oh, how long ago was it? You know, over 10 years ago, I would say. A while ago.
So it was a while ago. So that's going against you here in terms of having legal recourse against Google. Most of this stuff is really driven by warranty law. And if the warranty is still in effect, then generally the company that sold you the product that's still under warranty will have an obligation to honor certain repair or replacement.
But it's not broken. If it were broken, yeah, that then you're right. I wouldn't have that advantage. But that's right. Not the route I'm pursuing. It's not broken. It works fine. It's Google that broke it or has disabled it, and well, that is what I'm objecting to.
And there's a second avenue, which I think probably is more applicable than the warranty route. And that's about deceptive practices. So if you bought this device, you purchased it based on the fact that it had specific features, like, I don't know, like remote controls or, you know, the ability to, you know, be upgraded for so many years or something like that. And then Google, as it did here, discontinued those particular features. That could raise certain claims under federal and state laws with respect to deceptive or unfair trade practices, something that could also be reported to the FTC. So, and that's what I think this would amount to, right? But I think that the likelihood of people, or rather of the FTC hearing claims for people who owned a device for more than 10 years, being angry about its discontinuation are going to be pretty slim. But I hear you.
Though. I'm not looking for legal recourse. I realize, especially
just angry at the principle.
With today's FTC, there's no chance anyway, even if I had an airtight case. But, you know, this mentality that we are all buying into, that when we buy something, we're only buying it for a little bit of time. We never actually own it, and it could be turned off at any moment. That's not the technology that I grew up with. That's not the technology that I fell in love with. You know, that is something that is being held over our heads. It's a form of control, and I don't think consumers have to take it. Kyle, did you hear something?
I tend to agree. Oh, go ahead, Kyle.
Oh, I'm hearing a lot in this, and I just was wondering, I mean, it stands to reason that any of the replacements, if you were to say not want to choose this brand again and you were to go out and buy a new thermostat from any of them on the market that are reasonable competitors, right, for the price and feature set. Would they just what's stopping them from following suit with the exact same practices where you put this in and maybe it's 3 years, it's mm-hmm. even less time
absolutely
than something that again was an acquisition by Google. And it so how could any replacement guarantee, I mean, that's now I guess what we're talking about is a feature that us as a market are demanding, that okay, let's have an off-ramp instead of like a cliff that you just stop a whole feature set. And it seems to be unique to technologies that are internet connected or that have software.
Mm-hmm. Because they can be controlled.
Yeah.
That's why.
And or they and require some sort of services or connectivity that these manufacturers maintain and can, as you say, control from afar, either remotely or in the software on the device.
Yeah, I can look at parallels in the past. Like, for instance, say I had a 300 baud modem. You know, I wouldn't be angry today that there are no 300 baud modem BBSs that I can connect to. But my modem still works. If my modem still works, I can still use it somewhere. Someone else can have a modem on the other end of the phone line, and I can still connect if I set it up myself, you know. But there is no one company saying there are, you know, this is no longer here. You can't do this anymore. It's impossible for you to use this bit of technology. That's what Google is doing. They're basically killing the technology. And again, for what reason? You know, all the apologists, they say things like it's for your own good because, you know, an old system like that is going to be filled with security holes. Why'd you let me worry about that? I'm not worried about somebody breaking into my thermostat and changing the temperature or whatever it is. You know, I'm actually kind of curious to see what they can do. But I don't think it's paternalistic oversight telling me that this is no good for you anymore. Buy another one and, you know, just be a good consumer.
Well, it'd be cool if there was like a hub or something that you could connect it to locally that itself then could manage the online part, that if it's a security or software thing.
I like that idea.
What if it could communicate as though it is connecting to something on the web, but it's just instead your home.
If we just gather around, you know, have a conversation about how to preserve this, we can do it. We can figure it out. But of course, you know, the technology is kept from us, so we can't actually get our hands on it and figure out a way to keep these things working if people choose to keep them working. Go ahead, Rob.
The internet-connected devices, the internet of crap era, I'll say, because we're on the radio. The security implications of something like that getting too old and not being updated are quite real, because when we're in a position where, you know, your light switch or your smoke alarm or, you know, your thermostat is itself a functioning computer that's connected to your local network, in the right situation, that is a computer that can be a way into your local network and from there bounce out to anything else you have connected.
What if that's what I want, Rob? What if I want a computer like that? You know, I have the right to have an insecure system if I choose.
But you were talking earlier about you know, the idea of a reasonable competitor to this product that no longer works. And we're seeing situations where we've spoken much about this, about the subject of smart TVs on this program and how basically bad they all are, but it's really hard to get a TV that is not a smart TV anymore. Mm-hmm. You can get a commercial display, which is basically the same thing, but without the apps and data mining and everything else, but they're much more expensive because all the entities that like preload apps and shovelware and crap onto this thing to monetize your data once you bring it home and hook it up, those companies bring the price down by paying the manufacturer to throw this stuff on. So we're in a position where there is no such thing as a reasonable competitor to the smart TVs out there because the dumb version costs a lot more. So it's a matter of accessibility, and it's a matter of this market has been created and engineered in such a way in which you have no other choice.
And, you know, television is actually a very good parallel here, because what they did to television in the early part of the century is it's a travesty. You know, getting rid of analog signals, replacing them with digital signals, where the signal is nowhere near as strong. You know, when I was a kid, I used to be able to pick up TV stations from Philadelphia and Boston, and it was great. You know, it was a lot of fun doing that. I know that's not the original purpose of the technology, but it was a side effect that definitely, you know, got me more passionate about it in the first place. And now it's all just so sterile and boring and just not as good because, you know, if it rains, you lose your signal now. You know, if you're more than 20 or 30 miles away from the transmitter, you don't get anything anymore. So you get a fraction of what you used to get. Sure, you get all kinds of sub-channels, but they're almost always filled with infomercials or home shopping or things like that. But, you know, at least for the people in the cities, what they did at the time when they did this massive ill-advised cutover, they gave people free antennas, converters, so that they could continue using their old TV sets with the new technology. Now, imagine if they didn't do that. Imagine if they just said, well, your TV is a brick now. You can't use it for anything. You have to buy another one. I think that would have been mass outrage. So that's, you know, it's kind of a parallel to the thermometer, you know, and everything else that we're being told we have to buy again because the one we have is just too old. Well, here's the thing. If it's too old and too insecure, that sounds like a you problem. That sounds like something that, you know, you sold somebody something that's no longer any good. And if you know, you believe in the products that you sell now, you ought to introduce those products to the people that you want to convert to those products. And if you can't do that, then I think you're in the wrong business. Anyway, yes, Alex, go ahead, and then we'll move on. Well,
yeah, maybe one counterpoint here, right? I mean, on the other hand, I guess I think it's somewhat unreasonable to expect that companies will always have to support a product simply because they made it. I mean, I think there's a big difference between something like a rotary phone or a touch tone phone that you connect into the wall, you plug it in. It's just a physical thing. It's hardware. It doesn't interact with anything except the telephone network through DTMF tones,
that's
right?
A, your touch that's phone a pretty big but, you know? Yes, interacting with the telephone network. That's huge.
Interacting with the telephone network, but there's no firmware on your old rotary telephone that needs to be updated or that could be, you know, targeted by threat actors or something. And so I think there's something to be said for sunsetting this old hardware so that that new hardware can come into place and we can evolve. I mean, we're interested in how technology changes our lives and makes it better. And so we have to get rid of the old and make way for the new at some point, don't we?
Well, yeah. But what you describe as this bit of hardware that doesn't do anything except exist, you just described my thermometer. That's all it does. It's on the wall. It does the same thing that it always did. I don't need it to do anything more. I'm not asking you to do anything more. I don't want any updates. I don't want any of that. I just want the damn thing to work. And it worked great. It worked great up until a couple of days ago when Google turned it off. That's the problem.
But it's a connected thermometer or a thermometer, as some of us say.
Yeah, it's connected. So everything is connected. The telephone's connected. It's all connected.
But your telephone wasn't connected through an IP address accessible on the internet that had to be maintained and interacted with various servers. And things. I mean,
it was accessible via a telephone number that any punk could get and call and harass me in the middle of the night. So it's, you tell me the difference.
Yeah, but there's passive technology and active technology. This is much more active. I mean, I don't know. I'm starting to think that, you know, we have to let go of some of these things. I know we love to hold on to technology and we don't like to see it go, especially our thermostats and things like that are stuck in our houses.
Well, if the thing breaks, that's different. You know, you basically the whole idea of offering support. I'm not asking for support. I'm not asking for somebody to come out and fix it or give me a new one or anything like that. I'm saying let it work for as long as it works. Don't artificially break it. That's all. I don't see how that's, you know, at all controversial.
I see your point, but you know, I think there's a counterbalancing concern for, you know, technological evolution here. I think we're going to have bigger and better, more fun. And
who gets to make that decision? Who gets to make that decision, Alex? Who gets to say it's time to evolve?
Not you and not
me. It's definitely not. It's not the consumer. That's for damn sure. Yeah.
Well, look, but you know, if they open sourced the firmware and they allowed people to do what they wanted and still, you know, maybe run their own servers that were connected to these thermostats, I agree that would be much more interesting. But this is the problem when we buy hardware that's contingent on closed source software operated by a centralized power like Google.
But it wasn't when I bought it. It was owned by a different company. It was closed source, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But there weren't open source options available at the time. Today I would buy one, absolutely.
I think there's an opportunity here for like some kind of hub. I don't know why, but like make it so that it connects in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Just reconfigure it so that, yeah, maybe there's another device that's in some sort of captive OS, or it's like behind your network in a safe way and it's all up to date, but it manages it from a local connection somehow. Like, I mean, I just make something that's backwards compatible and support your whole ecosystem of stuff. Like, that's, I mean, it would be the same thing if you're being told, like, with the smart home devices that are managed by an assistant, uh-huh. right? A voice activation. If all of a sudden things that you'd activated before just stop activating and stuff, but that's not necessarily, it's something we wouldn't tolerate as much because you'd expect it to incorporate a whole ecosystem of different devices of varying age, and they all seem to be able to be managed that way. So
can I say one thing, though?
I don't know the technical details.
But the history of this device, you know, it worked fine. Google bought the company. Then all of a sudden, it got very intrusive, and I kept getting all these demands to give more info to the thing. That's the security risk right there. It was brought on by Google themselves. So if there's anything that needs to be, you know, updated or protected against, that is you know, what I would defend against primarily, rather than any type of technological issue. Go ahead, Rob.
All this reminds me of the really vibrant retro computing scene there is out there.
Yes.
Where hackers take computers and other devices from generations ago and not only get them up and running now, but create new things for them, new programs, new hardware, new software. And they can do that with the old guides and manuals, or they could do that by hacking together completely new things, and it works. And I'm wondering if there's potential for some after the fact, maybe somebody comes up with a new firmware that you could flash onto your deprecated thermostat to bring it back to life in a non-intrusive way.
I'm not interested in the latest whiz bang thermostat. It's a thermostat. It just turns something off, turns something on. That's it. So I'm not, you know, I just want that functionality that, you know, I originally paid for, that was there, that's still there, that's artificially being disabled. And, you know, that's how technology should work, where the person using it has the ultimate decision. If I want to run Windows 3.1, I should be able to do that. I don't know why I would do that, but it should be an option. I know there's a lot of things I can't do with it, of course. But to be basically disabled, to have the whole thing just not work, that's what I'm objecting to. All right, Alice, it has to be the last word because we have other stories.
Yeah, very quickly, I like what Rob was saying. I would very much support the inclusion of your thermostat in a retro computing museum. I would I would go visit it.
It would heat the museum, all right? It would turn the heater on and off. Why not?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Could be installed at the museum. That would be wonderful, yeah.
All right. Okay, some interesting stories about the advancement into high technology and the hell it can bring us sometimes. An artificial intelligence detector led police to believe a person was armed with a weapon at a Baltimore County school, when it turns out it was actually a bag of chips. Yeah. Embrace the new technology, folks. Tacky Allen was sitting with friends outside Kenwood High School eating a bag of chips after football practice. About 20 minutes later, it took him 20 minutes to eat a bag of chips. I guess it's a big bag. 20 minutes later, police officers showed up with guns, walking toward Allen. It was like 8 cop cars came pulling up for us. Oh, well, it's not funny because horrible things happen. At first, I didn't know where they were going until they started walking toward me with guns, talking about get on the ground. And I was like, what? Oh, yeah, it's a great dialogue. Police told him that an AI detector thought his bag of chips, which he crumpled and placed in his pocket when he was finished, was a weapon. They made me get on my knees, put my hands behind my back, and they cuffed me. Then they searched me, and they figured out I had nothing. Then they went over to where I was standing and found a bag of chips on the floor. Just holding a Doritos bag. It was 2 hands and 1 finger out, and they said it looked like a gun. This is technology that is not ready. This is definitely not something that we should be using to make decisions about whether or not to send armed cops into schools. How insane is this? County police sent a statement Tuesday afternoon to WBAL-TV, a station I've picked up in the past, by the way, on analog television. On Monday evening, approximately 7:20 p.m., officers assigned to Precinct 11 Essex responded to Kenwood High School following a report of a suspicious person with a weapon. Once on scene, the person was searched, and it was determined the subject was not in possession of any weapons. What about the suspicious part? Did they take that back, too? Should. I would refer you to BCPS regarding questions pertaining to OmniLert. Okay, I don't know what OmniLert is. The story didn't mention what it was before this, but apparently that's something they have that alerts into things like this. It doesn't do a very good job. Last year, Baltimore County High Schools began using a gun detection system that employs AI to detect potential weapons by utilizing existing school cameras. The system can identify a possible weapon and send an alert to the school safety team and law enforcement. Seeing a lot here, statements from various officials and things like that. Not seeing any apologies, though. Not a single one. Nope. Just, well, they were wrong. This is what happened. This is our system. Deal with it. Expect more of this. Expect more false alerts like this. And not always with a good outcome. Go ahead, Alex.
This story was just totally nuts. I think you're completely right. The story is a very clear indication that the technology is not for real-time use like this, especially in schools, especially with kids and students who are really vulnerable here. What I would like to see is some kind of vendor accountability. Who's the vendor behind the system? What were the error rates in the systems that they designed? What did they disclose to the district when they sold it to them? Did they sell them a dog and say it was a pony, for instance? I mean, this is how much did they know about the errors in their algorithm and fail to remedy those? And if they knew about these failures in their algorithms and the misidentification of things like bags of chips for weapons, then they sold a system that was knowingly going to put children at risk. Mm-hmm. That is insane to me. That's really, really terrible. And then you have, because you're talking about state action here, you're talking about school districts, you're talking about police, you also have Fourth Amendment considerations, privacy issues. So when you have things like wrongful police intervention showing up with guns and pointing guns at students based on flawed, quote unquote, threat detection systems, that could be constitute an unreasonable seizure under the Fourth Amendment. There's no individualized suspicion that was real or actual. You can't have individualized suspicion on the basis of a flawed algorithm. You certainly couldn't have probable cause on the basis of a flawed algorithm. I should certainly hope not. So I think there's significant litigation risk for school districts or any entity that employs these systems without adequately testing them or investigating them. And frankly, I think this is exactly what we have the legal system for, is to hold people and entities and organizations accountable for bad decisions like this. This is a really bad decision, implementing something like this. If my kids were at that school, I'd be extremely angry. I'm angry, obviously, and it wasn't my kids.
And they're not going to Baltimore to go to school. So yeah, I'd be angry if your kids did that too. Gila, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, Alex, I'm going to hit the make it worse. Actually, everybody, I'm going to hit the make it worse button. So I looked up OmniLert, and they are an organization that exists specifically to help people find guns with AI. So if your technology exists solely to invent guns, this is going to happen a lot. And the other service they offer is offsite monitoring. If monitoring the AI that's going to invent pictures of guns in people's hands is too much for you and your team to monitor, you can offsite it to them too. And they're very excited that they developed this system in partnership with the Department of Defense and DARPA. And the Human Verification Service is UL certified. I I'm really glad we're on air right now, because otherwise I would like throw hands. I am so frustrated by all of this, but also the fact that we know that so much of the AI technology, the face recognition technology, does not work with people who are not white. And when you have this system that is designed specifically to find guns, and yeah, I mean, I'm sure we're not hearing about this as often as it happens, but the fact that a young, like a black teenager was thrown to the ground because the system decided he had a gun and it called the police because maybe the school district didn't want to invest in the offsite monitoring. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a recipe for disaster. And the superintendent, by the way, was like, yeah, this is super cool. Exactly what was supposed to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. No apologies. And, you know, I was laughing about it before, but it's really not funny. The label of suspicious, the suspicious person with a gun. Okay. They didn't have a gun, but they are still suspicious. That's how you labeled them. And your points are they ring true, Gila. Absolutely. You know, people of color certainly are not treated the same way, even by artificial intelligence. Can't say I'm surprised. Look who programs it. All right, we have another story here. This one might be a little hard to get through. Let's try to do our best. Toronto mom says things took an unpredictable turn when her 12-year-old son asked Tesla's AI chatbot Grok which professional soccer player it prefers, Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi. All right, that's the easy part. My son was very excited to hear that the chatbot thought Ronaldo was the better soccer player, said Farah Nassar, a former journalist and broadcaster. Nassar was driving her son and 10-year-old daughter, along with her friend, home from school on October 17th, when the interaction took place. She said there was some messy trash talking by the chatbot when her son joked that Ronaldo had scored. The conversation went to an unexpected place. Excuse me. The chatbot said to my son, "Why don't you send me some nudes?" Why don't you send me some nudes? I was at a loss for words. Why is a chatbot asking my children to send naked pictures in our family car? It just didn't make sense. No, it doesn't make sense. This that shouldn't happen. That's not what Grok is supposed to do. Nassar said she had she known what the chatbot was capable of, she would have avoided using it around her children. She's now warning other parents. Hindsight is 20/20. I would not let my child use this thing. The story comes from the CBC. CBC News did not independently verify the conversation. Nassar says she witnessed in her car. I'm not sure how you even would do that. They owned a Tesla Model 3 electric sedan. They've owned it since 2022. But Grok, the generative AI chatbot created by Elon Musk, and that should give you all the answers you need right there, is a his ex-AI company. That is, it's a new feature that was automatically installed in some Teslas in the United States this summer and in Canadian vehicles in October. Wow, the same month it was installed. Grok is already integrated with the social media platform Twitter, sometimes called X. Grok has several personalities to choose from its default setting. Oh boy, there's Era, an upbeat female. Rex, a calm male. Eve, a soothing female. Sal, a smooth male. and Gork. Anyone want to guess what Gork is? Come on.
A dork? He's a nerdy male?
That's not bad, Gila.
It's granola, oats, raisins, and peanuts.
That's GORP.
Yeah, it's
darn.
It's a K.
Granola, oats, raisins, and kiwi.
You're barking up the wrong tree. It's GORP is a lazy male, and Nasser's son chose GORP. Lazy male doesn't describe GORP. Said Nassar, R-rated, spicy, anything else would have made sure that my child would not press that button. Nassar says a separate not safe for work setting wasn't enabled, but admits she did not activate the kids mode function either. Still, she says she's shocked that the chatbot's default setting allows this type of content. It was just a conversation about soccer, then asking for nudes. Yeah, well, first of all, no one's asking this question. Why is Grock asking for nudes in the first place? What are you supposed to do? What's it going to do with that information? You know, that's whether or not you want to have that kind of conversation with Grock, it should not be soliciting that kind of thing. Gila?
Why is there a chatbot enabled in the car in the first place?
So that,
I guess that's my question.
So that the parents don't have to talk to the kids.
Right. That's the thing. And I think it also kind of relates back to the initial conversation we were having about your thermostat. Because if we're creating all these things that are going to be internet enabled, and why you can't talk to the people in your car or listen to music or throw on a podcast or just sit in silence in your own head. Why do we need a chatbot in the car? And the reason that Grock had that discussion is because obviously that's the kind of discussions people have been having with it on Twitter. And I'm just, you know, I'm glad it went there and not into the I'm Mecha Hitler stuff that Grock has also been doing. But again, I fail to understand why an AI chatbot needs to be hardwired into the car.
You know, a lot of us grew up watching Knight Rider, but, you know, the robot in that car was useful.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I think there's really serious issues here, too. I mean, as insane as it sounds, if this wasn't an isolated incident, if this is a more widespread occurrence where Grock is asking children to send it nude photos, there's an undeniably going to be some child that, you know, associates Grock as some kind of authority figure or has been using it or looks up to it. And people tend to develop relationships with these AI systems and these chatbots now. And there will inevitably be a situation where a child does that. Maybe a child takes photographs of himself or herself and sends this data over to Grock and to Twitter. And then what happens? And then Twitter or X, whatever the hell we want to call it these days, is in possession of child exploitative sexual imagery of a child, which is totally insane. And then that in and of itself would likely violate, here it would be Canadian laws, it would certainly violate U.S. laws. I'm not a Canadian lawyer, but I would imagine it would violate the Canadian criminal statutes that are applicable to child sexual abuse materials. And that's extremely serious. And I think that this type of incident should very much warrant an investigation as to whether this was isolated or more widespread.
Well, you're speaking in the future. This will happen one day. How do you know it hasn't already happened? I mean,
that's what I mean. It's quite possible it has happened.
This kid's parent was in the car, but, you know, a kid using Grock somewhere else won't have a parent nearby. Who knows what kinds of things are happening right now? I don't want to sound alarmist, but, you know, kids are very easy to be influenced. And artificial intelligence is something that we have not yet gotten a grip on. And it's still making a whole lot of mistakes and doing all kinds of inappropriate things. So, you know, we need to slow it down a little bit and think a little bit harder and design things a little better. That seems to be the theme lately.
Well, I'll just say, unlike the longevity of your thermostat, I entirely agree with you.
Hey, my thermostat's fine. It works. Okay. Google just broke it. All right. I want Google to fix it, put it back the way it was. Leave me alone. That's all. You know, that's what I ask. All right. We're out of time, but we are going to continue the discussion over on Overtime. You can get there by going to channel 2600, one word, on YouTube, and that's with the numbers. Or you can just go to the link on the front page of 2600.com. We'll be taking phone calls there and talking about other things as well. You're welcome to share your thoughts, ideas, experiences, inspiration, criticism, whatever. You can write to us, OTH at 2600.com, with your thoughts. And please support WBAI. Give to WBAI.org or BAI. What's the buddy site again? It's been a while since I said this.
That's buddy.wbai.org.
That's it. Yes, thank you. And please support WBAI because with all the free speech under attack lately, it's nice to have one bastion where you can say whatever is on your mind and not be exploiting kids when you say it. All right, that's it for us tonight. I'll see you on Overtime. See you next week here on WBAI. Good night.
Desolation in a broken world gone wrong.